across from me, we got downtown Buffalo, New York. Some people say the armpit of America. I don't like that term. You know what I like? The beautiful Buffalo, New York.
Buffalo. 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 Buffalo.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Kyle Selegi Variety Hour, brought to you by USA Today Sports Media Group's Bills Wire. My name is Kyle Selegi, as the podcast title would imply, and today I'm joined by two of the boys, two of the guys who are here each and every week, laughing at each and every week, but the two guys that are here all the time to talk about the wonderful topics that surround the Buffalo Bills, and we have a few more of those wonderful topics to talk about today. We didn't stretch at all. I didn't claw at the bottom of the barrel to come up with these two topics. you know, they were just very natural. Everyone's talking about them, so that's what we're going to talk about today. So joining me to discuss the topics that I will talk or that I will introduce in a few moments. First, it's Justin DeLauro. D'Lo, what up?
Not much. I'm glad to be back on after this nice and hot week in Buffalo.
Oh, it was awful.
It's a little toasty. Got some pool time, but that was it. It was a little sweaty this week.
Very, very sweaty. My cousins are in from Michigan. This is a whole different story, but my older cousin, who is a nurse in Michigan, just texted us on Wednesday and was like, "Hey, I'm on my way to Buffalo. Can I park my camper in your front yard?" And we're just like, I guess if you're already on your way to Buffalo and you have nowhere else to put it, I guess you can park it on our front lawn. So she brought her three kids. And just long story short, my cousin called me sweaty. And I was very offended because I was sweating. I was quite sweaty given the heat this week. And I was in the kitchen all day yesterday making some fresh red sauce. And I'm like I'm not going to say what I was going to say, but I am very intense when it comes to cooking. To the point where I want everything fresh. So I was in the kitchen yesterday boiling tomatoes to get the skin to, like, break, and then ripping off the skin of the tomatoes, and then dicing up the tomatoes, and then putting that on, or in a pan, let that, you know, cook all day to get red tomato sauce. You know, red and tomatoes, kind of redundant, but you understand what I'm saying. Long story short, I was sweating because I made fresh tomato sauce because it was very hot. And my cousin called me out on it, and I didn't appreciate it whatsoever. Also here, it's McKenna Middlebrook. McKenna, did you sweat this week?
I was sweating all week because I have to wear a suit every day to work. So I am blazing. But I had so many I had my mind was moving so fast during this introduction because I wanted to see something quippy, you know, on my way in. But that has fallen to pieces. Because I was going to say, the Bills should rename to the Buffalo Union just to mess with people, because earlier we were talking about how I think NFL teams should really just steal as much as they can from English soccer, including the naming traditions. And then you mentioned Michigan. I was like, oh, one of my favorite songs of all time is called Michigan by the Milk Carton Kids. So now I was just in this, you know, I had so many choices, so I just did this instead, which is terrible.
Right, but then I threw you off even more by just asking if you sweat this week, so... Yeah. I kind of backed you up into a corner there.
Yeah, do you at least have a story about making sauce?
I've made meat sauce before, where it was, you know, I think it was intense as Kyle, but it was a full day in the kitchen, you know, just trying to get everything perfect, as they say.
Like a bolognese, are you saying? Like a bolognese?
Bolognese. I think I said that once when I was living abroad, and the person I was sitting across from corrected me to not bolognese, and I was like,
excuse me?
Yeah, no, I was like, I'm saying this one correct. Like, I don't say things perfectly all the time, but this one, I'm pretty sure, is fine. And then, you know, I felt very offended.
Do they want just, like, I don't know, more flowingness in the word, like bolognese?
I think that's what they said, and they sort of said it with an Italian accent, but they weren't Italian.
Oh, so they were pretentious.
Yeah, and I was just like... I mean, like, ordering red wine at the time, I was like, do you want me to say, like, exactly this? I want this type of grape in my red wine. Like, is that how far you want this to go? Because I'll do it. Like, I don't care. I'll be pretentious as much as anyone else.
I could do it. I could act up, but
yeah.
Is that it for sauce stories? D'Lo, you ever make sauce?
I have.
Like
that's it. That's it. I'm a walking stereotype. So yeah, I've made sauce.
I don't want to brag or anything, but my red sauce is pretty damn good.
That's it.
It's pretty fresh tomatoes make the world of difference.
That is
the
true.
World difference. Is that the phrase? I don't know. But like, it's to the point where I don't think I can eat it like without fresh tomatoes. And that's a dangerous thing. That's a dangerous road to go down because tomatoes, you know, to make fresh sauce, tomatoes are a bitch to work with. They are just, it's a time consuming. It gets your hand all messy. I had so much tomato juice on my hands yesterday that my hands shriveled up as though I'd been in the pool for hours, but no, it was just tomato juice. It was disgusting, but the sauce was very good.
Plus, if you're out of season, it's rugged with tomatoes.
It's very rugged, but thankfully the sauce yesterday turned out very well. And thank you guys for listening to Sauce Talk. Yes. We'll be back next
Saucing
week.
With no, the boys. But...
Welcome to HGTV.
Oh, good
time. I want my own show on the Food Network. Look, I've already come to terms with the fact that this sports writing thing and sports broadcasting thing probably not going to work out for me. But if I can parlay this podcast and just, you know, this whole life, I guess, into a show on the Cooking Network or the Food Network, I need to get the network name right. Well, then it's a success.
Cooking Network.
I want to be the next Guy Fieri.
Oh, yeah. We're going to Flavortown, baby.
Going to Flavor. I want there to be petitions to rename Buffalo whatever dumb brand I come up with.
I don't know. The Flavortown Blue Jackets are coming in.
I would sign that petition. I think Flavortown's a great name for a city.
They just have, what would they put as their logo?
Flavortown Blue Jackets. They would just put, like, a French fry instead of the hockey stick in their logo. Wait, that's not even their logo anymore. It used to be the B with the hockey stick. Yeah. Now it's just a star. Whatever. Whatever. Who cares about the Columbus Blue Jackets? Just they're a useless team. A worthless team. Speaking of worthless teams, the Buffalo Bills.
Oh my god.
that would have been a good transition had I, you know, had it actually led into something. But so I sat down yesterday thinking about what we were going to discuss on this week's podcast. And I'm not going to lie. After we had, you know, taken that month and a half break from the podcast, I had started to miss it a little bit. I was like, I kind of miss sitting down every week talking to the boys about Buffalo Bills football and various other topics, or should I say a variety of other topics for roughly an hour. I missed that. So then when we did that last week, I was like, oh, I had a good time. This is fun. I enjoy doing this again. And then when it came time to think of a podcast or of a topic for this week, I was like, I remember why I didn't want to do this anymore, because there's nothing to talk about. So what I've done, to an extent, I didn't really do much. I just looked at two of the, I guess, bigger storylines regarding actual NFL players this week, because there was a lot of stuff that happened non-player related, like, you know, with COVID regulations and COVID safety precautions or whatever, like no jersey swapping after the game. The NFL doesn't care if you tackle a guy and you hold on to his waist and drive him to the ground, but you better not hand your jersey to him after the game. Idiotic.
You gotta wash it first.
Very, very stupid. Like, what? It's just ridiculous. But I don't want to talk about that. So what we are going to talk about...
They just have, like, a washing station with a washerwoman after the game so everyone can swap jerseys. That would be awesome. Oh, my goodness.
Old that would be hilarious.
You know, they have a bonnet on and they're just scrubbing off their jerseys. Oh, good times.
Or they just... Why don't they just, like, retrieve a non-worn jersey from the back, place it down, and then walk 6 feet away, then the other person can come and pick it up.
Yeah, I think they could throw it in a ball 6 feet away.
Yeah.
That's a better idea.
Ball that sucker up and just launch it across.
Yeah, these are pro football players. I'm sure they have the arm strength to throw a jersey 6 feet.
I don't know. Nathan Peterman had trouble with that.
Nathan Peterman would get intercepted.
He get intercepted by the non-fans that are there.
Josh Allen's would just go, whoop. Well over, out of the stadium. What I did right there is I played into a stereotype that I often try to disprove. So I'm not helping my
real
cause.
PFF, Kyle, you're a real PFF. I don't know what to tell you. Okay, but going off this PFF thing, because we ranted about them last week. Terrible they are. They released their yearly stat of essentially the quarterback who threw the most uncatchable passes. And obviously Josh Allen was number one on that list. I think it was 27.5% of his passes were uncatchable. And again, those guys at PFF must have felt so smug as they posted it. And they knew that they were going to get so much, like, traction off that one post because of Bills fans and because of fans around the league who just like to make fun of Josh Allen about how he's a terrible quarterback and he shouldn't be in the league. So they're infuriating. I hate them. Not even the people, just their metrics and how they, you know, sort of get, like, how they get their numbers. It's just infuriating.
I mean, NFL teams, I think they receive statistics from PFF, but there are a lot of players and there are a lot of people who work in the league or around the league that just kind of laugh at it, I guess, because you don't know. PFF doesn't know the majority of the stuff that they're grading, I guess, or they don't know a player's assignments. Like, a player can do exactly what he was supposed to do and get a negative grade for that play because it didn't look good on film. But it's like, no, he actually did exactly what the coach wanted him to do on that play. He did his assignment, but you're going to say he did it poorly? Okay, that, like, even right. though he did exactly what he was supposed to do. It's just so difficult to grade a player's performance when you don't know what they're being asked to do. Like quarterbacks, I guess, you can kind of, to an extent, do all right with it because you can grade, or you can look at how they're reading the field, their arm strength, if it's an accurate throw, if it's a, you know, underthrow, overthrow, whatever. But, like, offensive and defensive linemen, like, offensive linemen, especially, you don't know their assignment. You don't know who they're supposed to block. You don't know any of that stuff. So it's right. just...
And a player who gets, like, shafted on that a lot is Tre'Davious White, because he has lower grades because the Bills primarily play a zone defense, which they just don't think is as valuable as playing man-to-man defense. But when a quarterback does not throw the ball Tre'Davious White's way at all during a game, how can you say that he's, you know, bad when he's proving that he is a great player, a shutdown player, because quarterbacks just be like, no, I'm not going to go to his side of the field at all. So he has a lower grade because he has, I guess, like, less touches in a way, if you know what I mean.
Right, less reps, less opportunity to show what he's capable of. I guess everyone...
Oh, there we go.
I guess it's a storm outside. Uh-oh. That's
like, a new siren.
Yeah, everyone's entitled to their own opinion, I guess. Everyone can think how they want to, or everyone can have their own opinion on whatever player they want to have an opinion on. But just, I want that opinion to be educated. I don't want people to, and like, I think that's why I'm so defensive, not even defensive about Josh Allen. I just get upset when these outlets won't let their initial opinion of Josh Allen be shifted. Because, look, you can read my past articles. You can listen to past podcasts from before the 2018 draft. I did not want Josh Allen. I wanted to stay far away from Josh Allen. I maybe even liked Riley Ferguson more than I liked Josh Allen. Yeah, that's a big oof for Josh Allen there. But
that's a big oof for you.
Riley Ferguson working at a Waffle House now. But like,
UDFA.
did not pan out for him. But I mean, Josh Allen, I am a fan of Josh Allen though. I like watching him play. Do I think he's going to be an elite quarterback one day? Only time will tell, but I think he has the potential to be. Like, just seeing what he is, seeing what his floor is, at least. His floor is, like, being competitive on a bad team, which is what he was in his rookie year. He led a team that probably shouldn't have won 3 games to 6 games. And I know just how bad that team was. I worked for the Bills that year. That was an awful team. I think I've said this before, but I remember after the second game when they got killed by the Chargers, I said how I wanted to write a Bills Today note about how Stevie Johnson, officiated a marriage in the parking lot. And my boss was like, oh, that's a good idea. You're going to need to get creative this year, I'd imagine. Just because everyone knew the team was going to be bad. But by the end of the year, there was optimism because of how well Josh Allen played that year. And then we see last year, people can say, oh, he was awful. But no, he led a team to 10 wins and a playoff game. And granted, he didn't really play that well in the playoff game. But if he continues to grow, continues to show improvement, which I think we all think he's going to do, he will be a very good quarterback one day. So, and that's why it just pisses me off to see people sticking by their initial opinions and not letting it progress as Josh Allen progresses as a player. But whatever. As I said, everyone can think what they want to think. So I'm going to reintroduce the topic now. 14 minutes in and I haven't decided what the topic is. So, this week, both Cleveland Browns tight end David Njoku and San Francisco 49ers running back Raheem Mostert requested trades. I think David Njoku, it's more so because he's not going to get that much playing time in Cleveland. At least it doesn't look as though he's going to get a lot of playing time. They signed Austin Hooper this offseason. I think they have a couple more good tight ends on that roster. Didn't they draft a guy?
They did.
Yeah.
It was in the fourth round, I think.
I don't remember who they drafted, but
don't ask me his name, though. I don't know why.
I'm gonna guess it's Harrison Bryant. That's my guess.
Harrison Bryant's not a bad guess. This is going to drive me nuts because they have good tight ends. David Njoku, probably not the best one. I think Austin Hooper's probably the best one.
Yeah, that's why they Harrison Bryant.
Harrison Bryant.
Harrison Bryant. The FAU guy, correct?
Yes, FAU. Yes. Fourth round pick. Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, he's fine. he's a fine player. David Njoku's better. But David Njoku, given the number of talented tight ends Cleveland has on that roster, he doesn't think he's going to get the playing time that he wants. And I think he's coming up on a contract year pretty soon. I think they exercised his fifth-year option, Cleveland did, but even then, 2 years from now is when he's going to be in for a big deal. Not a big deal, but his contract is going to be up. He could hypothetically get paid, and he wants to show his talent so he can cash in on that when he ultimately hits the open market. And then Raheem Mostert, I think that is an issue of pay. I think he wants to be paid for his efforts in the playoffs. He wants to be paid as one of the NFL's better running backs because of the strong postseason he had. So both of them are looking for new homes. Both of them have formally requested trades, from what I understand. And the question of the day, sorry, I'm distracted by rain. I have ADHD, I guess. But the question of today that we're going to be discussing on this podcast is, should the Bills pursue Raheem Mostert or David Njoku? I think my opinion on both of them is the same, but I'm not going to say what that is yet. First, I'm going to go to D'Lo, and I'm going to ask him about Raheem Mostert. D'Lo, should the Bills pursue Raheem Mostert?
I mean, I don't think so. I mean, running backs are a dime a dozen right now. They drafted Zach Moss to go with Singletary. I mean, they have Yeldon. I mean, if they bring in Mostert, what are they going to do, Yeldon him? You know what I mean? Like you're going to have him as a third running back, or it just doesn't make sense to bring him in with this crew right now. The only thing that, you know, the only redeeming quality is that he's been in the NFL and he's probably has a, you know, easier learning curve to a new offense than maybe Zach Moss. But outside of that, I just don't see them throwing big money at him. I mean, Mostert's making $2.7 or $8 million this year.
He's looking right, for a and he wants a new deal.
And he wants a new deal, and they're going to give him a new deal when they have two running backs who, you know, conceivably could be more effective and more efficient than him, who are making significantly less money. They're probably making that combined right now. Mm-hmm. Probably less than that, obviously. You know, if they're making two combined, that's about right. So, I mean, I just don't see Mostert in the future of the Bills. And the way the NFL is with running backs, I don't know where he's going to go. Like, I don't know what team would really jump at him. I mean, he did have a nice run at the end of, you know, the last 9 games he played. He ran for something like 277 yards and 12 touchdowns. Great end to, you know, last season. But he was largely a has-been, or an also-ran is probably the better word, for the first, you know, 40-some-odd games of his career. So, you know, it's just, I don't know, like, what team's going to trade for him and then say, hey, here's, you know, number one running back money for a position that really doesn't command it for a player who hasn't shown it over a full season.
Yeah, here's my thing on Raheem Mostert. And I like the point you bring up about the Bills already having Devin Singletary and Zach Moss. But, like, going off that, I kind of would like having Raheem Mostert in that backfield because you look at what San Francisco did last year. Their offense succeeded with a three-headed monster at running back with Tevin Coleman, Raheem Mostert, and Matt Breida. All had over 100 carries last year. So they really got their running backs involved. So, and like with Jimmy G, who's a limited quarterback, I think a talented quarterback, but I don't think he's as talented as Josh Allen. He's probably a better quarterback than Josh Allen, if that makes sense, but I don't think he's as talented as Josh Allen.
Yeah, he's a better passer than Josh Allen.
Yeah, I agree with that. But going off that, I mean, like, given the comparable, I guess, style of play, no, they're not, I don't even know what I'm saying. Jimmy G and Josh Allen are not comparable, but they're comparable states of their career where there's a lot of potential there, but they're not, you know, you don't want them to be this focus of your offense right now. So with the Bills, if they had the opportunity to run a similar thing, to have a three-headed monster at running back with Singletary, Moss, and then if you brought in Raheem Mostert, who, again, was part of that three-headed attack in San Francisco, I like that idea to an extent. I like the idea of having the three-headed monster with a guy who has already really benefited from being in a three-headed monster backfield. I think he was the 49ers' leading rusher last year. He was. He had 772 yards. Again, the majority of those came later in the season when he really turned it on. But, you know, just in general, I like the idea of having the three-headed monster in the backfield. But what I don't like is, A, having to give up an asset for Raheem Mostert, a mid to late round draft pick. No, thank you. I do not want to give up a draft pick for Raheem Mostert. I don't want to give Raheem Mostert money because, as you said, D'Lo, I don't think he's shown over the course of his career that he is a consistent, reliable running back. He's had a good half of season, and he had a good postseason. Like, I remember saying to my, I was at my friend's house watching the NFC Championship last year when Raheem Mostert, I think, ran for like 200 on the Green Bay Packers. He just had like an insane NFC Championship. And I looked to my friend and I was like, you know what's crazy? Next year at this time, Raheem Mostert's going to go back to being Raheem Mostert. Nope. No one's going to know who Raheem Mostert is next year. We'll remember him like, oh yeah, he was really good for a short period of time. But I don't think I've seen enough from him just throughout his career. He's been in the league since 2015. How many rosters has he been on? He's played in regular season games for the Browns, the 2015 Browns, he's been in San Francisco since 2016, but I think he's been on more rosters than that. I don't think it's just the two rosters.
He's been on the Dolphins, the Browns, the Ravens, the Bears, the Niners.
Five teams. My guy's been on five teams, and how old is he? How old is Raheem Mostert at this point?
He's 28.
He's 28, and he's had, what, eight or nine good games? That's not enough for me to say I'm going to pay you as though you're one of the better running backs in the league. Given, what, the 8 out of 44 good games in your career and you want to cash in on those, maybe some team will be dumb enough to do it. I just don't want that team to be the Bills. And again, I'm it's not the player that I'm like, or it's not the idea that I'm against, because I like the idea of having a three-headed monster to kind of supplement Josh Allen, to kind of complement Josh Allen, just having a consistent and good running attack, good rushing attack that can move the offense down the field should Josh Allen start to struggle. But I just don't think you should bring in Raheem. I don't think you should give up an asset for Raheem Mostert and then pay him, because I think if you do want that three-headed monster, just bring in someone else or do it with TJ Yeldon. I don't think Raheem Mostert has to be the guy, especially not with a big contract attached to him. So, McKenna, how do you feel about the Raheem Mostert possibility?
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of it. He has a similar style of running to TJ Yeldon, and, you know, TJ Yeldon wasn't really used all that often last season with Devin Singletary and Frank Gore, and he's probably even pushed down further now with the addition of Zach Moss, who is, I think, a better complement to Devin Singletary, because of he will, as he said, you'll have to make a business decision if you want to tackle me. You know, like, he'll run through you. While Devin Singletary, as we've talked about so many times before, he's shifty, he has speed, but that's not really what he's known for. He's known for making people miss at the line of scrimmage and, you know, sort of being a shifty player. But to go off your point of saying, you, Kyle, you want a three-headed monster in the backfield, you do with Josh Allen. You don't need a
third. Well, then a four-headed monster.
that's fair, but you with Josh Allen, you know, he takes the part of a running back sometimes. He scored what? He has more touchdowns in the past two seasons than Ezekiel Elliott. You know, they use him in very smart ways, in very successful ways, and when the pocket breaks down, he can, you know, he showed it against Houston, where he can run, he can pick up a 50-yard gain with his legs, not with the breeze, really. Like, he did not seem flustered by that at all. So the addition of Mostert doesn't really make sense in terms of the style of runner he is, because if you want a similar runner, you have TJ Yeldon. and the fact that you're going to have to, he'll want a big contract, and you'll have to give up a pick for him, it just doesn't make sense. I don't see Buffalo making that move. It'd be very reactionary, which Brandon Bean doesn't seem, he's not about that. He doesn't make reactionary moves. He makes very calculated moves. So I don't see it happening. I can see, like, a desperate team like the Jaguars. This is a Jaguars move written all over it. They'll definitely send, like, a third-round pick, a third and a fourth over to San Francisco for Raheem Mostert, which might work out for them, might not, because, like you said, he had 9 really, really good games, but 44 bad games, you know, average games.
Right, right. He's just, you know, whatever running back, you know, third string special team running back. That's what he's been throughout his entire career. He popped off and he wants to cash in on that. But I, if I'm a GM, any GM, regardless of my team, I'm just like, that's not enough. Like that's not enough to make you, to pay you like you're a top running back in this league, because you're not. You were a top running back in this league for a couple of games last year. And as you alluded to, D'Lo, like, the running back position is just so weird. You know, there are a couple guys who kind of are consistently good, who year in and year out are, you know, good running backs. And then there's other guys who just pop off and then they fade back to obscurity. I mean, Philip Lindsay. When was the last time Philip Lindsay did anything? Just like, there's these flavors of the week at running back all the time.
Look at that, Kyle.
Philip Lindsay's a great, he was good for a year, but then, I mean, Denver. But just like, as I said, flavors of the week are, you know, it happens every year at running back, and I think Raheem Mostert, I think he's more Philip Lindsay than he is Ezekiel Elliott.
Yards last season and 7 touchdowns.
What happened?
Philip Lindsay had 1,000 yards last season and 7 touchdowns.
And now he shares a backfield with Melvin Gordon.
So he's a fine running back.
he's better than Raheem Mostert, because he's more consistent, but... You know, like, yeah, he's not a world beater. You know,
right.
He's not a Le'Veon Bell.
What I'm trying to say is, I think Raheem Mostert, I think his ceiling at this point is, like, fine player. I don't think he's going to, you know, stay among the upper echelon of running backs next year. I just think he's going to go back to being a fine player. He'll probably have a bigger role than he did before. I don't think he's going to be third string and special teamer, but I think he will just be a fine complementary back, which the Bills do not need. Does that wrap up Raheem Mostert talk here?
I think the only thing is, like, his 220-yard game against the Packers, like, that skews things a little bit, right?
Yeah.
I mean, in 3 playoff games, he had, you know, blah, 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 336 yards. I mean, if you look at his last 9 games where he ran for 760 yards, that was more than the 645 he ran in for the first 44 games. There's some reason why he didn't pop off those first 44 games, and you're getting a 28-year-old already running back. I just don't think it's a wise move.
Yeah, especially at 28. I mean, like, you can say, oh, well, he didn't really play the first whatever year, however many years of his career, he's got more tread on the tire, but, like, he's been playing football for how long? Like, obviously he played high school, college, probably rec league or whatever. Obviously he's, I don't know about Pop Warner football. I don't know about the lower levels of football. I don't know. But, I'm sure his body, running backs break down at 30 years old. That's just what happens. It's time and time again demonstrated that that's what happens, unless you're Adrian Peterson or Frank Gore. It happened 5 years later, 5 years after 30. But yeah, it's not worth it. It's not worth the risk for it. Not even the risk. It's just not worth it for a team like the Bills to give up an asset for a guy who was good for 8 out of 44 games, as we said, and give him a contract. So what we're going to do now.
One last thing to the Raheem Mostert chat.
Okay.
He might also just be a product of a Kyle Shanahan system.
Oh, so you're saying he's like Matt Ryan?
Like, you know, like, we talk about system quarterbacks, but if you have a good system, you can excel decent players to really, really good players. It just happens that Raheem Mostert really fit what Kyle Shanahan was doing at that time. So if you bring him to a different team with a different system, he might go back to, you know, his old self, or he's just a complimentary piece. Just, you know, we should start talking about more about system running backs more than system quarterbacks.
System running backs.
Bold take.
All right. I don't know if our next look, we might be stretching for time here, so I'm just going to throw in a different, a random conversation piece. Look, a few years ago, Sean McVay, or even a year ago, Sean McVay was like the hottest name in coaching. You know, everyone wanted the next Sean McVay. I mean, his quarterback coach got a head coaching job because he was associated with Sean McVay. Everyone wanted to get in on that trend started by Sean McVay, the young offensive mind, you know, just guys like Sean McVay. I would say Kyle Shanahan is the better coach by far. How do you guys feel about that?
I think that's accurate right now. I think Sean McVay had one really, really good year where, you know, he led his team to the Super Bowl. But with Kyle Shanahan, I think there is a better system in place with better players, just not last season but the season before, without when they lost Jimmy G. I think that was more of an anomaly, it was a fluke because he didn't have the quarterback that he needed.
I'm not even saying that Sean McVay is a bad head coach either. I just think that Sean McVay right now is kind of paying for the weird mistakes or the weird decisions made by Les Snead, the general manager. I think if I just pulled the Los Angeles Rams general manager's name out of my ass, pat on the back for me.
That was pretty good.
But I think his name is Les Snead, because how are you going to forget a name like Les Snead? But I think he's made some weird decisions. He's paid some weird players like Jared Goff, Todd Gurley. So now the roster, I mean, they had a very good roster for a couple of years there. Sean McVay was really good in his rookie season as a head coach, and then the year where he just, you know, he had that basically a Pro Bowl roster, and they made it to the Super Bowl and lost. And last year, you kind of saw it start to crumble around him because they were tight on money. And I think this year, you're probably going to see them take another step back because they're still tight on money. But Sean McVay, I think, is a good head coach. He's just kind of handicapped by financial handicapped by a weird financial situation at this point. But Kyle Shanahan, I just think his system, I think, has worked in more places. Atlanta, he took them to the Super Bowl. Matt Ryan, he made him an MVP. Last year, I mean, Jimmy G's a fine quarterback, but he got Jimmy G to take the 49ers to the Super Bowl. I just think Deebo Samuel, he saw what he did with Deebo Samuel. At how many other places does Deebo Samuel become that good of a player so quickly? How many other systems do you just throw him into and try
this
to...
This may sound like a joke, but Brian Daboll would probably... He'd probably have a decent career in Buffalo with the way that Brian Daboll uses that on Isaiah McKenzie.
Well, that's the thing. I remember before the 2019 draft. I remember before the 2019 draft, I did a mock draft for Bills Wire, and I wrote, it's almost as though Deebo Samuel was made for a Brian Daboll offense because he does like to use players like Samuel in roles like that. But I just feel like... I feel like Daboll would use Deebo Samuel as a decoy. I feel like he would do like one or two trick plays every couple weeks with Deebo Samuel, and that's what you would get. You know, he wouldn't really play up to his strengths that often. Because Isaiah McKenzie, he's more often than not a decoy. You'll see him on an end around, and once every couple of weeks he'll catch a ball. But with Deebo Samuel, he's just become one of the NFL's brighter young receivers because of the Kyle Shanahan system. So I just think, like, right now you ask me, who do you want to lead your coach, Kyle Shanahan or Sean McVay? I'm saying Kyle Shanahan all day.
I agree.
D'Lo, what's your thought on this as I try to extend the podcast time a little
bit? No, I like it. I'm actually looking at some of the mistakes that the Rams have done with their contract.
Jared Goff,
definitely. But looking at their dead cap right now, Brandon Cooks counts.
Right.
His cap hit this year is $21.8 million.
Oh my god!
Against the Rams cap, 4.2 for signing bonus, roster bonus of $4 million. Made the roster bonus, then got traded. Interesting. And then the option bonus of $13.6 million. That's wild. Gurley's cap hit this year is $9.25 million.
Oh my god.
So they're just paying the wrong guys.
They're paying the wrong guys. And you know what? I think Gurley's another $9 million in 2021. So, but you know what? Good coaches find a way around that.
You're right. Sean McDermott
did it with a $50+ million dead cap hit, and he did it with Josh Allen as his quarterback, who probably wasn't supposed to play in 2018. And
He did it with Tyrod Taylor, you know, with a little
right
bit
that
of,
year.
Yeah.
With a little bit of luck.
Took that team to the playoffs.
With a horrible roster.
Like, one of the worst rosters.
Kelvin Benjamin's your number one. Number one wide receiver, not even tight end.
All right, here's a conversation. Who's the better Sean Mick?
Oh.
I think, honestly, like, you could make the case for Sean McDermott because, you know, he's not a flashy offensive guy, but he has consistently been having one of the best defenses in the league, which is very hard to do. He is up there with these past few seasons with Bill Belichick in terms of how he runs his defense. And, you know, Sean McVay's a flashy guy, and he gets more attention because he's in L.A. You know, he's right.
Offensive, young, exciting.
Jared Goff, but, you know, like, if you put pound for pound, coach for coach, I'm probably taking Sean McDermott, because as great as offenses are, you know, defenses, I still believe, do win championships, because if you look at what the Chiefs did during their playoff run, they had, when they were winning, it was their defense that really held out for their offense to catch up sometimes. So, yeah, that's my bold take.
D'Lo, who's the better Sean Mick?
I think McDermott's done more with less.
Yes.
So, by far, you know, I'd be leaning toward McDermott.
By far?
By far. It's not, you know, I don't know.
Put him in a cage and let him fight.
By far.
McDermott would win a cage fight. Absolutely.
Oh, McDermott would destroy him. I mean, here's the thing. I like McVay. I like how he breaks down the game. I mean, it's nice. It's just right now he's had better players. He's had more talent on his roster. You know, if McDermott tanks this year, if they have a horrible season, then you start to rethink that. Because now, you know, 4 years into the McDermott regime, now you have a roster that really reflects what he wants his team to look like. In 2017, that was just a train wreck. The mere fact that they won 9 games is a minor miracle. I can't even imagine what they were supposed to win.
One?
Not
like it's just, so that's why I think McDermott, you roll with it. And, you know, at the time in 2017, you were like, why are they making the moves that they're making? And then all of a sudden you look at the Sammy Watkins trade, you look at the Darius trade, and you're like, okay, there's a vision. It's going to take some time, and it ultimately worked out. So,
right.
Unlike the Buffalo Sabres. So I think you have to go with McDermott, but if they don't make a step forward this year, then you can lean back and say, you know, at least McVay's had some success in the playoffs.
All right, McVay's won a playoff game or two.
Right.
Bills haven't done that this millennium.
I don't know. This is difficult. I might go McDermott just because, look, a strong defense, that's something that we've it's proven. It stood the test of time that you can consistently win games with a good defense, which is what McDermott has had in Buffalo for going on 4 years. That defense has been incredibly stout, still looks as though it's one of the league's better defenses. And like you said, D'Lo, Sean McVay's had better players. I mean, Sean McVay, I feel like, has inherited superstars, or has, like, signed superstars, whereas Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott have kind of had to put players in positions to succeed to the point where they look like a superstar. Like, Matt Milano wasn't supposed to be anything. Very good linebacker. Tre'Davious White wasn't supposed to be one of the league's best cornerbacks. He is, given the system. And then, like, you look at what the Rams have done with Aaron Donald. Sean McVay inherited him. Signed Ndamukong Suh for a year. Todd Gurley was good when he got there. You know, just players like that. I feel like Sean McDermott, as you said, D'Lo, has done more with less, so I might have to go with Sean McDermott.
Well, I was just doing some Googling. And CBS Sports, Sean Wagner McGow. Another Sean Mick. And so he has his top 10 coaches. McVay is 6th overall in the league. Shanahan's 5th. It's just his top 10 list. And not in the top 10 is Mr. McDermott.
That's really harsh, I think. He is definitely a top 10 coach because he was getting Coach of the Year buzz at the end of last season because of how well the defense was playing and how he was able to manage the offense.
Yeah, it has to be cumulative. I mean, although number 10, he has Mike Zimmer.
I mean, you can't Look, I can say I'd rather have Sean McDermott than Sean McVay, but if you are making what you think is an objective list of the top 10 coaches in the league, you really can't put Sean McDermott over, you know, guys who have won in the playoffs. You just really can't do it.
I think there's some recency bias with McDermott. It's just hard because I don't know what the criteria are for this guy. He just...
Well, if it's... Ian, that's tough. It is tough, but... I mean, if we're going, like, right now, like, at the start of this season, who would you rather have? I'm going with McDermott because, like you said, he has done a lot with not as great as players as Sean McVay. And I think of the way a modern NFL franchise is run, where you have your GM making a lot of decisions, but he's working in tandem with his head coach. Mm-hmm. And Sean McDermott has proven, like, with Brandon Bean, that he can, they make the right moves, you know, in the 2018 draft. That's a Josh Allen draft, right? It's 2018, right? Yeah. You know, Brandon Bean got his guy with Josh Allen, but Sean McDermott's like, hey, I need my guy. I need Tremaine Edmonds. And they found a way to work that out, which is super important. And the fact that he has been able to create a culture and you sort of manage the personalities on the team, which you don't think, hey, there's probably not a lot of personality on the team, but that's probably due to the culture that he is, you know, created. And we saw what it was like when Rex Ryan was there. It was sort of a train wreck, you know? So it's really tough. It's tough, but yeah, I'd go with McDermott.
Hell of a conversation, boys.
That was good.
Yeah.
More thunder, and I just yawned. We are, this is a judgment day, I guess, coming up here. So, I guess we're moving on to now, David Njoku talk. David Njoku, the tight end for the Cleveland Browns, as I alluded to earlier in the podcast, has requested a trade out of the other team based on Lake Erie. And maybe he wants to come to the other one. Maybe he wants to come up the lake a little bit. I doubt it. Who would want to move from Cleveland to Buffalo? That's a, that'd be a poor David Njoku move.
That's a pretty lateral move.
Right. Can you imagine? I mean, if you were in... Okay.
Hey, and here's Jordan another Poyer thing. Did it.
Well, he was in a position where it's like, if you want to play football...
That's true.
Got to come up to Buffalo. Like, David Njoku from Cedar Grove, New Jersey, but he went to school at Miami. So, like, and this is the thing with, like, Willis McGahee, right? Or, you know, going back to that. Like, Willis McGahee went, I think he was from Miami, went to college in Miami, moved up to Buffalo, which is nothing like Miami, and he didn't like it, and people hated him for it. It's like, couldn't you blame him? Like, Buffalo's not for everyone. It's just simply not for everyone. So, and, like, David Njoku, I can't imagine... Like, you went to school in Miami. I don't want to speak on behalf of David Njoku, but I know if I went to school in Miami and I went to Cleveland, I wouldn't be happy about that initially. Right. And then if I get traded to Buffalo, I'd be like, are you kidding me?
Oh, my goodness.
Like, yeah. Send me to any other team.
Except for Green Bay, maybe.
Corey Coleman. Do you remember Corey Coleman a few years ago? Yeah. Cleveland to Buffalo? Rough.
And then he got cut, like, 2 days later.
Then he got cut, right. Is he still in the league? What's he up to?
I'll do a quick Google search. Don't you worry.
Didn't he have some time with New England?
Yes, he did. And I remember Chris Brown went off on Twitter. Who is he?
He's a member of the Giants.
I remember that.
Really?
I vaguely remember that.
I would put him on my Madden team.
Oh, I would too. That speed? Absolutely. Yeah. Just put him on go routes. But... Like, I remember Chris Brown, after Corey Coleman got signed by the Patriots, just went off on Twitter. He's like, he's absolutely not going to make it there. He's very much for himself. He's not a team-first guy. Absolutely not going to make it in New England. And I remember just thinking, like, what the hell did he do in 2 weeks in Buffalo that you're so, like, so on edge about Corey Coleman?
He didn't eat at the Big Tree Inn, and he ate his wings with ranch.
Could you imagine?
Cut him.
That a lot of fans are probably like, yeah, cut him. We will not have ranch eaters on this team. I won't allow it. Anyway, David Njoku, the siren's going off. That is a cue to continue. That's cue to continue going on here. So David Njoku, the former Miami tight end, wants a trade out of Cleveland. So should the Buffalo Bills pursue him? Before we talk about that, let's look at David Njoku. So, in a potential trade for David Njoku, what you're hoping to get is growth. You're hoping that you're acquiring a player who showed a lot of promise out of college and that you can put him in your system and he can kind of grow and develop into the player he's supposed to be. Because you look at what he's done in Cleveland throughout the past 3 years, and it's not much. In 2017, 32 receptions for 386 yards. That's not a great rookie year.
It's a Dawson Knox year. That's very similar stats to Dawson Knox. I think Njoku had a few more touchdowns.
He had four touchdowns in his rookie year. Followed that up in 2018 with 56 receptions for 639 yards. So he's starting to show some promise. And then last year he missed the majority of the year with a wrist injury and a concussion. So he only appeared in four games, five receptions, 41 yards. So David Njoku's a guy with a lot of potential. Again, showed it in Miami, has shown it. In glimpses or in flashes with Cleveland, he just hasn't really put it all together. So any team that's pursuing David Njoku, they are hoping that they can be the team to help him reach his potential. But should that team be Buffalo? I don't think so. I like the idea of David Njoku. I think he's a very talented player, and I think should he put it all together, he could be one of the league's better tight ends potentially. I also think they maybe have that in Dawson Knox. I don't think the Bills need to upgrade a tight end. That's a position that people have pointed at all offseason as a position that the Bills need to improve in. I don't think they need to improve in that position. And you can say, yes, they do. They've tried to bring in Greg Olsen. I think they wanted Greg Olsen because he's Greg Olsen, not because he's a good tight end. They want, obviously, him being a good tight end helps, but I think they wanted Greg Olsen because they're familiar with him, good culture guy, good team guy, and again, he'd be an upgrade at the position. Why not upgrade the position? But, like, you look at David Njoku, I don't think they would think that's an upgrade necessarily. I think they like Tyler Kroft. I mean, they didn't cut him. They could have saved money this offseason by cutting him. I think they'd feel like they'd be giving him like a bad rap, I guess, or, you know, not a clean opportunity if he was injured throughout the majority of last year and you didn't really get to see what he could do with a full season of health in your offense. So I think they want to see what Tyler Kroft can do. Dawson Knox showed a ton of promise last year, though he dropped like 10 passes or so. He dropped a considerable number of passes. He still showed a lot of promise, showed some good catching ability, showed some good ability in the open field, not necessarily with shiftiness, but with put his head down and just run players over. He showed last year that he is a very interesting prospect at tight end. Then they have Tommy Sweeney, who I think is a very underrated do-it-all type of player. I think he can be a role player. I think he's a very serviceable number three tight end. And they also have Jason Kroom on the roster. Don't sleep on Jason Kroom. He showed some flashes of ability in 2018 when there was nothing else on the roster. So given the four tight ends they currently have on the roster, I think that's not necessarily like a strong group, but it's an interesting group. It's a group with a lot of promise with Kroft, Knox, Sweeney, and Kroom if he makes the roster. So again, you bring in Njoku in there. I think he has the same issue that he had with Cleveland. It's a lack of touches because they still want to get Kroft his touches. They still want to get Knox his touches so he continues to develop. I don't necessarily know if Tommy Sweeney is going to be a focus in the offense, like get Tommy Sweeney the ball. I don't think that's necessarily something that the Bills are going to focus on next year. But even between Kroft and Knox, I think Njoku is still battling for touches, which A, is not what he wants to do, and B, I think that stunts Dawson Knox's development if you bring in Njoku, unless you're going to be running two tight end sets all the time with Njoku and Knox, which kind of seems, after I say that kind of seems fun, but again, that kind of stunts Knox's development. But now I'm kind of talking myself as I'm continuing to talk and I'm thinking about this. I'm kind of thinking, well, Kroft's probably gone after this year. And Njoku you can get for like a third or a fourth round pick, I'd assume. I don't think any team's going to give him more than that. So if you can get him or give Cleveland more than a third or fourth round pick. So if you can get him for that and kind of, you know, let him duke it out this year with Kroft and Knox for the playing time and then run two tight end sets in 2021 with Njoku and Knox, that's a fun offense. I don't know if you have much blocking ability there, but that's a fun tight end group. So McKenna, how do you feel about this potential David Njoku thing?
There are three, in my mind, obvious locations for Njoku to land. Number one, the New England Patriots, obviously. They've been crying out for a tight end ever since Gronk left. The second is the Green Bay Packers, because what are their weapons on offense? D'Lo, what are their weapons?
Devonta Adams.
Very good.
And then everybody else.
Exactly. They're crying out for a tight end who can just a playmaker outside of Devontae Adams. I almost forgot his name. And then the third is Seattle for me, because it's similar to Green Bay, where they just, you know, DK Metcalf had a great rookie season. They have Tyler Lockett, but they really need, like every great offense, you need multiple pieces. It can't be just one or two guys. So those are the obvious landing spots, but Buffalo wouldn't be terrible for David Njoku, because I think he gets some competition from, I think, primarily Dawson Knox and Tommy Sweeney. I think Tyler Kroft might really be a non-factor going into this season. I think Jason Krum is a non-factor going into.
Oh, you're sleeping. You sleep.
I might be, but I think Tommy Sweeney might be the most. I think he's like a hidden gem in the offense, because we really saw a lot of him in preseason. But something he showed was, you know, he has really strong hands, and he just seems to be open. And I think he played a few times in the regular season. Again, he got open, you know. And teams just sort of like to forget about him because he's not a big name, and you assume he's in there to block. But, you know, he has some route running ability. So having three serviceable, you know, potential really good tight ends is better than having two, in my opinion. And I think you could have a really fun offense with Dawson Knox and David Njoku just this season. That tight end group would be so athletic. And, you know, Josh Allen could just, you know, high point a ball up to either one of them, and they can make the catch. And again, you're not giving up probably a third round pick. A third round pick, which is something you'd probably give up for Raheem Mostert. I think you're getting more bang for your buck with David Njoku.
D'Lo, I will transition this to you in a moment here, but I've completely forgotten that Lee Smith exists and that he's a football player who is on this roster. So I said earlier that like they wouldn't have a blocker in there. They have Lee Smith. Yeah. But he's bad. So D'Lo, David Njoku, should the Bills go after
him? I mean, I'm listening. I'm interested. That sounded really creepy. I mean, I think he's a good player. I think there's a lot of potential there. He's only 24. The one thing, though, with Buffalo is last year they ran a boatload of one tight end sets with three wide receivers, 11 offense. I think it was like 70% of the time they, you know, threw out three guys in one tight end. So
yeah,
one
after Dable went to the booth, they ran a lot.
So they ran a boatload of that. So if that trend continues, you know, then you're sitting Knox. You know, if they've decided that they want to do, you know, two tight end sets, you know, Njoku could be really interesting. He and Knox could be, you know, interesting. And if it ends up being the sacrifice of, let's say, a roster spot for a, you know, Tyler Kroft or Tommy Sweeney, you know, so be it. But I would listen to it. I think a fourth round pick would be as high as I would go.
Yeah.
And Njoku's not going to make much this year. It's under $2 million, and then I think he's going to make like $6 million. In 2021.
Yeah, whatever the fifth year option.
So if the Bills are interested in that he could be a matchup nightmare if used properly. The problem is that he landed in Cleveland.
Yeah, that's a big problem.
2017, I mean, he really didn't play last year. 2017, he was drafted, and I mean, think about it. They got it right with Myles Garrett, although he likes to throw helmets, and then they ended up trading Jabril Peppers, and then that was the year they drafted DeShone Kizer. So there wasn't a lot going on for Cleveland, and now they're going through kind of, you know, clearing the deck and trying to fix things so that, you know, they can get Baker Mayfield to do something decent. I think dealing, you know, see, here's the weird part to me too. They bring in Austin Hooper on a 4-year, $42 million deal. This is going to be an indictment on Cleveland more than Njoku, so get ready. So they bring in this guy. I mean, are they going to run two tight end sets? I mean, you have talent. It just doesn't make sense to me. And then with, you know, are they're just going to put Landry and Beckham out wide and put one running back? Like, I don't know. Maybe that's their plan, but they got a lot of stuff that they need to fix. Okay, that's enough of my Browns talk. I guess I'm listening. I mean, I don't think it would cost too much. There is a crazy website, though. Can I tell you a crazy website? Hold on.
Is it beatspin.com?
Dogpound Daily.
That's sounds similar to meetspin.com.
It's through Fansided. And their writer has an article that has five potential landing spots, or five possible David Njoku trades for the Cleveland Browns. So as you scroll down, Buffalo's on that list. And I was like, all right, I'll bite at this. And their trade for David Njoku, their proposal, is Matt Milano.
Oh, no! That person probably has
That's
never seen
hilarious.
That
like, at all. Like, come on.
Well, yeah, let's trade one of the league's better outside linebackers. Not even, like, potential speaking. Just right now, one of the league's more athletic and better outside linebackers for a tight end who has shown nothing. Get out of here.
He very much have never watched, he may have watched the Bills play once and he had a quiet game. He's like, oh, he's expendable. It's a linebacker. And the Bills have, you know, AJ Klein and Bosan Joseph. They can get rid of him. He's so valuable to that defense.
This poor dude didn't do his homework because he talks about Milano will probably ask for a cheaper contract next offseason. It would be a good investment for the Browns since they have, the worst linebacking core in the NFL. But, that's brutal. I don't even want to,
poor guy.
Deal with that. But I would give up a fourth round pick.
Matt Milano's going to get paid.
Yeah.
Somebody's paying him. He's the quintessential outside linebacker of the modern NFL.
Yeah,
he is. He's the prototypical modern linebacker. I've written about that for years, about the prototypical modern linebacker. And Matt Milano is the picture. If you look it up in the dictionary, that's him. Athletic freak, very good in coverage, ball hawking ability, always around the ball, sure tackler.
I mean, the only danger with Milano is if the Bills don't think they can re-sign him, because right now, SpotTrack lists his market value at something insane, like $13 million a year. Which
it's a lot of money, but he's worth
it. But I would pay it.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I would pay that. I think I would keep this defense together as long as I could and, throw out a 4 or 5 year deal.
Wouldn't give up. Would not trade him for David Njoku.
Would not trade him for David Njoku.
Who would you trade Matt Milano for? I think that's a better question.
Patrick Mahomes.
It's got to be like Connor McDavid, right?
I
Eichel and Milano for. Did the Edmonton Eskimos have anyone good? Can we take someone from?
We
the
already
Eskimos?
Took Duke Williams.
True.
We just took him.
I'm trying to think, is there anyone, well, obviously there are probably players I would trade Matt Milano for, but off the top of my head, I can't think of anything where it's you are opening up such a big hole if you trade Matt Milano.
Yeah, so
this is sort of talking about looking way into the future, but if you're Brandon Beeb next offseason, are you just re-signing everyone whose contracts are almost expiring? Is that what you do? You're like, we're not going to try to get any other new players in. We just need to focus on us right now.
I think it's going to depend on the season.
Yeah.
I think unfortunately it's going to be, it's going to be what does the end of the season produce for this team? Do they win playoff games? If they miss the playoffs, I mean, I don't know how much better this roster is supposed to get with missing the playoffs without sitting there and saying, you know what, we got to try something different. And we know where that starts.
If I'm Brandon Bean, the future is literally keeping me up at night. Just knowing the decisions he has to make down the road with this team, especially with either very few to no fans this year. The salary cap's going to go down next year. Yeah. And you have a lot of good players on this team right now who are either on their rookie deals or not making that much money. You look at Josh Allen is going to need Patrick Mahomes just reset the quarterback market. I'm not going to say Josh Allen's ever going to make anywhere near that amount of money, but Josh Allen's still going to make a considerable amount of money. Probably 20-something to $30 million a year is what Josh Allen's going to cash in on when he ultimately gets his deal. Stephon Diggs, who knows how long he's going to be happy on this contract, especially if he shows out. If he plays well with Josh Allen, he shows that he's a top 10, top 5 receiver in this league, he's going to want a new deal. Going even more soon, I guess. Tre'Davious White needs a new deal soon.
ASAP.
Milano.
Do you do Dawkins?
Dawkins, Edmonds. There are so many solid, very good young players on this team who are going to need new deals. And with that salary cap situation uncertain, I am scared. I am scared. And like you see, Brandon Bean is gonna have to make decisions on who are the most crucial guys. And like honestly, I would have said Jordan Poyer is not one of those crucial guys, but he just gave him a new deal, so I mean, he views him as one.
The only good thing is Poyer's deal is only 2 years. The extension's right. only two, so it's not. I don't think it's gonna run into massive problems. I just looked up the calculated market value for Allen. The quarterback market is drunk. Like it's absolutely just so his comparables. Jared Goff is his comparable because Goff signed his deal at 24 for $134 million. So is Allen better than Goff?
That's a conversation.
That's a conversation that we'll see. He might need to make more than $33.5 million.
Ask me in January.
What about Carson Wentz signed his 4-year deal at 26? And is $32 million a year.
This has me stressed now that I brought it up. Oh my god,
this is bad.
I'm stressed.
Bad.
I think the most obvious, for me at least, the most obvious cut is Deion Dawkins.
I hope that Trey Adams kid like comes in and is like a UDFA that just like tears it up.
But like Deion Dawkins, like I never felt like he has really established himself as a premier, you know, offensive lineman. Like. He's had flashes where he's very good, but he still makes a lot.
Yeah, he's fine.
What?
He's fine, but are you going to give him 13 to 15 million?
I'm not giving him Tom Tackle money.
So yeah. Calculated market value is 15.9.
Nah.
That's a no for me.
Nah. I don't think Deion Dawkins is bad, but I don't think – I mean, like, I think ESPN just put out, like, their rankings of whatever, the top offensive linemen, and Deion Dawkins got votes. It's like Deion Dawkins is not anywhere near a top 10 offensive lineman or offensive tackle in this league. He's just not. He's fine. I mean, like, even last year, you can't say he is one of the best tackles in the league if last year at this time they were talking about whether or not they were going to push him into guard. Like, he's just not one of the better tackles in the league. He's fine, but I'm not paying him $15 million a year. Maybe this is what we do next week. We just go through and talk about which players the Bills should pay.
I mean, they definitely have a lot of free agents coming up, so it's...
Yeah.
Oof. But that's $16 million a year for Dawkins. That just, I palpitated. my heart done skipped with that one. That's, I mean, if Allen's making 32, Dawkins is making 16, Milano's making 15, Trey White's gonna make what, 17? Edmonds eventually is gonna make 12 to 15, and who knows how much that goes up. And it depends on what like you mentioned earlier, what's gonna happen with the cap.
It's scary.
Why do we have to end like this?
So in Joku,
we're not trading. I like, truthfully, like, I don't think a fourth round pick. Well, we don't have a fourth. Screw it.
A fourth doesn't get it done. I don't think. I don't even know if a third gets it done.
I don't know. Like, I don't know if I'm trading anything like a day two pick for him, because I just don't think. I think with him not really playing last year and the first 2 years being kind of a train wreck, I'm going off notes from. The NFL draft.
Exactly.
And he hasn't shown consistently to be that player.
Right. He's a hard player to evaluate. Yeah, because, as you said, Cleveland.
Cleveland, yeah, and Cleveland ruined it. So, I mean, didn't he have, like, Johnny Manziel throwing to him in his first year, maybe? I don't know.
Was that the 0-16 year?
2017? I'll look it up. He might be right, because Deshaun Kizer, I think, was starting at one point.
Kizer,
yes, I think that's the 0-16 year.
I forget that happened. Like, that amazes me.
Right? It's so recent still.
Yeah. Manziel was gone. He only played to 14-15.
Right, it's Deshaun Kizer.
But Kizer was drafted the year that Njoku was drafted.
Right, they had three first-round picks, and they got Kizer in the second.
2016, Cleveland.
Yeah, they took Garrett Peppers and...
And Njoku.
The guy we're talking about, Njoku.
They went 1-15 in 2016.
1-15, okay. All right, 2017 they went 0-16. Yeah, then they drafted Baker Mayfield and everything got better.
Right? That's rough. Okay. That is so rough as a rookie.
Welcome to the league, buddy.
Right? You're terrible. You're one of the worst.
With Deshaun Kizer, and then 28, then they drafted Mayfield and Nick.
Do you think there were any Cleveland fans after that year saying, don't take a quarterback at 1 or 4, just see what Kaiser can do?
Probably.
There's probably like a few. Because anyway, Deshaun Kaiser went to Notre Dame, and there are probably like a couple of Notre Dame fans who are like, you know, he had his potential. I saw him play in college. He, you know, he can be the real deal. And it's like the 1%.
Deshaun Kaiser, didn't he say something along the lines of, like, he has Tom Brady's brain and someone else's body? I have to look this up before we go. Someone just wrap up David Njoku talk, because I think he said something stupid to Deshaun Kaiser.
David Njoku is not going to come to Buffalo. That's the end of the talk. The Bills are going to run with the roster that they have. This is it. I can't see anybody.
Yeah, I
don't even think the move would be smart with this, you know, with dealing with coronavirus right now. So you're going to bring in a player in July and hope he's going to have some type of impact. If you're bringing in a player, you're bringing in a player who's going to who has to produce. Njoku hasn't produced. I mean, even if you sign somebody like the Bills went, you know, got drunk and were to sign somebody like Austin Hooper, just for an example, if that were a signing, I don't think there's time for him to acclimate. I mean, I think it's going to be a little bit of a stretch for Stefon Diggs to be as effective as they hope he's going to be. I think he's going to be a very good player, but I think that curve without having the time to really work with this offense is going to be a challenge this upcoming season.
I agree. 100%.
I have the Deshaun Kaiser quote up here.
I got the quote as well. No one else can do what I do, Kaiser told USA Today Sports in an interview. And I've truly figured out in this draft process, if I can maximize all my potential in every aspect of the game, this is bold, I do have the ability to be the greatest quarterback to ever play. Imagine taking Brady's intellect and Brady's preparation and putting it on a guy with Cam Newton's body. Why can't I be the greatest? The only thing stopping me from me, or the only thing stopping me from is me. The only thing stopping me from is me.
Stopping it from me.
It said the only thing stopping me from me is me.
He doesn't have the body of Cam Newton, though. Cam Newton is...
Yeah.
They're both tall, but Cam Newton's thick.
He said the brain of Tom Brady and the body of Cam Newton, and the thing that held you up is the body of Cam Newton.
This
is Deshaun Kaiser.
You know, he might be smart. He had a terrible team around him. You know what? I'm a Deshaun Kaiser truther. He can be the greatest quarterback of all time. Now he's out of cowards.
I love it. We are Deshaun Kaiser fans. Why isn't he on a roster?
He could be. He's gonna be the greatest quarterback of all time. But it might be in, you know, the CFL or something.
I wish I knew he said that. Well, if I had known of this part of the quote earlier, if I can maximize all my potential in every aspect of the game, this is bold. I do have the ability to be the greatest quarterback. That's amazing.
I love the confidence, though. You know, going in, you have to be confident. But
yeah, I mean, football didn't work out for him. He should be working in sales somewhere, because he can. I mean, he just sold me on him.
He did.
After I know that he led a team to an 0-16 season, I'm sold on him absolutely.
This is great.
He has a future in sales if that's what he wants to do. So
He's only 24 too. So once again, we got another player who got overhyped and is going to be done early.
I don't even know if he was overhyped. he has the brain of Tom Brady and the body of Cam Newton. I mean, come on here.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, my Green Bay Packers traded for him.
I was going to say, he's had a couple stops, right?
And he was in Oakland last year.
Raiders and the Packers.
Browns, Packers, Raiders. What a hat trick that is.
Speaking of the Raiders, we are going over now, but I don't care.
We made it.
Have you guys seen the Raiders Stadium in Las Vegas?
It looks awesome.
It is incredible.
Too bad nobody's going to be there.
I think I'm a Raiders fan now.
Really?
That's bold.
And this is bold. I think I could be the greatest quarterback to ever play.
No, I don't think the roster's horrible, though.
Oakland? Yeah, they're not very good.
They're not good, but I don't think it's horrid, though. I
love it. I think this is beautiful. Speaking of new stadiums, have you seen the what Real Madrid's gonna do with their new stadium?
I've seen it in the past, but I can't think of it.
It's essentially the same sort of style, where it's very like futuristic, but it's gonna have sort of LED like almost like billboards where they can put anything they want around it on the outside.
Oh, that's sick.
Oh my god, it's gonna be so great. And this looks amazing too. I like how it's all black. I love that so much. Mm-hmm. Oh my good, this is awesome.
And I saw photos from For the Win, our sister site that doesn't know we exist. It was they have paintings somewhere in the stadium, but they have like really big paintings. One is Elvis Presley in a Raiders uniform, and the other is Marilyn Monroe in like a cheerleader outfit.
That's awesome.
I just think it's brilliant. Look, the Raiders are just, they are the ultimate like what are you doing team.
I love it.
Like, why have you spent this much money on a stadium? I guess the taxpayers did, but why would you spend this much money on a stadium? Like, and the color palette is black and white. Like, everything is either black or white. Why would you spend however much money to 3D print a 95-foot torch? Like, it's just, it's so stupid. It's all so stupid, and I love it, and I hope Marcus Mariota becomes the quarterback, because that'll only make it better. I like Josh Jacobs. You know, John Gruden's funny. they're just such a funny team.
He's funny. You know, he's not good. He's funny. Oh my goodness! I love new stadiums. We have to have a discussion soon about what the Bills' next stadium should be, a la the interview I had with you over quarantine, Kyle.
All right, for my I didn't do well on that paper.
Really?
Sorry.
It wasn't your fault. It was entirely my fault. I left it all until the day it was due. Actually, I left it all until the day it was due, and I didn't feel like doing it. So then I emailed my teacher, and I was like, can I have, like, a few more days to do this? And she's like, yeah, sure. So then I waited until the last day again to do it, until about 5 o'clock on the last day to do it. And I was up to like, 1 a.m. writing this shitty-ass article about the Bills Stadium. Oh, boy, it wasn't good. But that's my story.
You're sticking to it.
Does that wrap it up?
Wait, one sec. I'm speaking of stadium talk. Wolverhampton Wanderers are also doing a new stadium. And again, it looks wild.
I need to find this.
It's going
to
be yellow and black. And if there's going to be up, well, that's, you know, that's the colors. It looks unique at least with a white roof. And in the front, there's going to be all glass with the... with their logo like engraved or whatever, you know, on the front. It looks awesome.
Wolves are a fun team. They're a team that, like, I think Brad Gelber a few years ago asked, like, which Premier League team should I support? And I said, support Wolves, because they're a young, already talented team, and they have ownership that, you know, wants to make Wolves one of the best soccer teams in the world. Or football team, sorry. So they're just like, if you are a fan, again, we talk about soccer almost every week on this podcast. If you are at least like intrigued about the sport and you're looking for a team to support, go with Wolves. I mean, because they are a fun team with a bright future.
It's true.
That
should be your team, Kyle.
Huh?
That should be your team.
Hey, when West Ham go down, I'll switch.
Oh, they're not going down, it looks like, actually. It's going to be Bournemouth and Aston Villa. So, West
Ham
standing.
Aston Villa's going back down?
Yeah. Oh, and yeah. That's going to be great. Support the world, everyone. That's my takeaway from all of this madness.
Wait, are only two teams going down?
Norwich
is already going down.
Yeah.
Oh. Uh-oh. Didn't they, like, win the championship last year or something?
They did.
Yeah.
I love these teams. They just freaking kill it. In the championship, come up and they just suck.
West Ham slapped Norwich today.
You love to see it. At least I do. Bournemouth have been around for a couple of years.
Yeah,
too.
They had a crazy story. They were fighting for, you know, they were in League One for a while. Then they scratched and scruffed their way up to the championship, and they made it to the Premier League. They're up there for 5 or 6 years, but eventually they just fell apart. You know, bad ownership really did them in.
I mean. There are teams, I mean, the vast majority of teams that are, like, you know, in the championship for a long time that get up to the Premier League, they can really only hope to be there for a couple of years.
Yeah.
Like, they're just really not, a lot of teams don't have the infrastructure to be able to stick around. Leicester City is the anomaly
in
it. They're the team that, like, a lot of people didn't expect them to be around for a long time in the Prem, and they won the damn thing, and now they're one of the at least brighter young teams. And they're very good. They're a very good team, and they, you know, it looks like they're going to be in the Premier League for the foreseeable future at least.
Right, because once you win the Prem, you get so much money, and they have really great owners like Wolves. So I think Wolves will be another example of a team that has great ownership, and they'll just stay around because they'll actually spend some cash in the transfer market to make them competitive. And they have a possibility of making the Champions League next season, which is a huge boost. Huge boost for everybody. So,
what were we going to say, D-Lo?
Oh, I was just thinking, Bournemouth, they played Tottenham. They played Spurs last, right? I feel like that's a game where they almost won, and a guy, they got up 1-0, and then there was a handball in the box, and the VAR took it away, so they ended up with a draw instead of the win, and at least...
That's frustrating.
At least they would have had 30 points, and now they're back down to 28, and the Spurs are not good.
Bad.
Oh, we should get Nick Wotan on one of these weeks to discuss being a Spurs fan. Yeah. You guys watching his Twitch streams?
No, I haven't yet.
Oh,
are they interesting?
There's something else.
You won't watch. Are they interesting?
No.
Should we have a Twitch stream?
I want to do a Twitch stream. Look, if we ever did a Twitch stream, though, we would have to learn from Nick Wotan's mistakes, and we would have to have a camera and a microphone.
yeah.
Nick Wotan, I love watching it because it's, you know, I just write in chat. I just troll him in chat. But he just streams his career mode games. With, like, no context. Like, I don't know the players on his team. I don't know how he got Blackpool to the Premier League. I don't know if he just put him in there, if he worked his way up as, like, a Road to Glory type thing. I don't know any of the players, but they're not very highly rated, which makes me think he's playing on a lower difficulty. If he's making the Champions League with 60 and 70 overall players, or low 80 overall players.
Questionable.
And that's the thing, is he doesn't have a microphone, so I can't ask him these questions. It's just, it's something else. You guys should tune into his streams.
I'll just troll him in chat.
I did one time. It was hilarious. I was just in his chat, just like, whenever he got scored on, I would just be like, oh, rough. damn, you suck. You know, just shit like that. But, like, I think I wrote this in Slack the other day. I was so pissed at myself because he was losing 4-0 at halftime in one of his games, and I was just trolling him in chat. And then he came back, and I found myself emotionally invested. To the point where I was, like, genuinely excited when he scored a goal in, like, the 89th minute to tie the game. I was like, holy shit, this is amazing. And it was an FA Cup game, but he lost in penalties. He didn't score one, and the other team scored, like, three straight.
Come on. Penalties are so easy in FIFA now.
Couldn't do it. Guy couldn't do it.
Not clutch. He's not Josh Allen, you know what I mean? Not fourth quarter player.
He's not clutch. Can't finish it off. So that'll wrap it up for this week. A lot of nonsense there at the end, but that'll wrap it up for this week. Thank you guys for listening. Make sure to follow Bills Wire on Twitter at The Bills Wire, on Facebook at Bills Wire. Make sure to follow D-Lo on Twitter at
Jay DeLauro.
Make sure to follow McKenna on Twitter at
McKenna Middle.
And you can follow me on Twitter at Kyle Salagi. Thank you guys for listening, and we'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Buffalo. 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 Buffalo.
I love Buffalo, New York.